Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and joining us today is Dr. Richard Moss, author of his new book, Inside Out Healing. We will be engaged in a most provocative talk about how one begins to observe their own energy force and become aware that each and every thought generates emotions and sensations. So, of course, learning to listen to our thoughts and engage only in those thoughts that inspire prosperity, joy, and feeling good is the ticket to improving our lives. Hello, Dr. Moss.
Hi. Thank you, Cheryl.
Richard, you know, as listeners of Healing From Within know, it is my prime objective and that of many of the visionary leaders who have been guests on this show to help people to begin to realize their ability to use heightened intuition and subtle insights into views of self and about others, and to show the personal power that lies within is for accessing universal energy or our divine life force. And this provides guidance which can improve many challenges. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Dr. Richard Moss is known as the maestro of deep work. And I like that term, deep work, because it indeed does take a lot of work to become the conscious human being and citizen that we can become. And this deep work is a program that guides people to delve deeply into their inner core so they can achieve a life of radical aliveness, unconditional love, and real inner peace. His method inspires life-changing transformations that can lead to harmony within yourself and in your relationships and with the world. Richard is an internationally respected leader, visionary thinker in the field of personal transformation, self-healing, group energy dynamics, and the art of living conscious relationships as an evolutionary spiritual path. And he is the author of many books. For 37 years, he has guided people to make essential life changes for furthering their health, their spiritual development, and achieving deeply meaningful relationships. And isn't this what life should be about? Finding the way to grow, expand, and evolve. So the first question I'd like to ask you, Richard, is please tell us something about the year 1977 and what you described as a spontaneous state of illumination that changed your life, your understanding of human consciousness and behavior. Was it a near-death experience?
No, not at all. It was a new life experience. I was 30. It was a few days after where it began, maybe on my 30th birthday. And it was, you know, rather than going into the detail of it, essentially, it was the awakening of a completely new consciousness. And sometimes I think of it as kind of spiritual puberty, because all of us have gone through puberty. We may not easily remember how different it was before the hormones hit and our bodies changed and our hair changed. But in a sense, something then is added. You can have children, and you begin to have... Well, many things happen in puberty. With spiritual awakening, which people have given it so many different names, cosmic consciousness, self-realization, God consciousness, Christ consciousness, there's a lot of different names. There is a long tradition of this emerging spontaneously, and I am part of that tradition, where it wasn't the product of being with a spiritual teacher and being ignited by a teacher, or even really the result of a lot of spiritual practice. I had certainly an inclination. I had been involved in watching my own dreams since I was in my late teens, and I had been in medical school. I already started doing some psychotherapy because otherwise I wouldn't have stayed in medicine. It was so in some ways that the educational process, at least when I did it, pretty soul-deadening, so much information to memorize. And
I think you were looking for the heart of the matter,
yeah,
the truth
exactly
of our soul or inner being, and sometimes we can get lost in unimportant information. But I sort of had a similar situation. It was a little later than 30, but I call it an awakening or a maturity, a looking to improve the maturity of the soul. And I think it happens sometimes with great love, an experience of great loss, or an experience of great love. It's like an opening up of an inner process that we knew something was missing before, and then we slowly start to realize what we need to focus our attention on. And you also said, I found this very interesting, that the root cause of most unnecessary human suffering comes from two basic forms of ignorance. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, you know,
I agree with you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to just say, as a doctor, we want to try to understand illness. And if we try to understand emotional suffering, the two causes of emotional suffering are that we're constantly thinking. And in my book, Inside Out Healing, I show that there's in the nature of thoughts, there are four basic directions the mind goes to find these thoughts: the past, the future, so thoughts about the past or beliefs about the past, and thoughts about the future, ways we imagine the future, the kinds of judgments we make of ourselves, and the kinds of judgments we make of other people, other religions, basically everything, houses, clothes, careers, endlessly, the endless things that we tell ourselves stories about. When you actually identify with those, when you believe those thoughts, every single one of those thoughts arouses sensation, or very specifically, the thoughts arouse emotion. So if you say, I'm smarter than you, and it may or may not be true because there's so many forms of intelligence, but what it really is an assertion of your own grandiosity. Usually very close after that comes anger, and you feel superior. If you say, oh, I'm not as attractive, or I'm not as smart as so-and-so, or I have trouble learning, or I'll never be able to do this, every one of those thoughts make you feel special in a kind of depressive way. And we could just go on and on. Every thought about your husband or your wife or your children that isn't factual. If I say my father is depressed, and he is, that's factual. But if the subtext to that is, and he should be getting therapy, he should be doing more for himself, then when I have the thought my father is depressed, it's not just that thought. It's not a factual thought. It's a thought that starts to make me angry, a thought that starts to make me powerless or helpless, or a thought that makes me want to try to do something for him. In other words, every thought arouses us, creates an action.
Well, Richard.
And so that's the disease. The disease is believing your thoughts. And the second disease, very simply, is we have so many feelings that we're afraid to let ourselves feel. We're afraid truly to let ourselves be vulnerable. And we defend against those feelings with very archaic behavior, even when we're adults. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work for love. It doesn't work for success. It doesn't work for intimacy. It just doesn't work to make life,
you know,
worth living.
Richard, I like what you said. You said that feelings are intelligent and they give us subtle messages in the body. So, for example, if you get a stomach ache or a headache when you're in a certain place or with certain situations or people, it's your body's way of telling you that something is not in your best interest. And then you said emotions are not intelligent. They are a way of our feelings getting away from us, running away, and we can then have anger, frustration, fear, disbelief, all types of negative interactions or reactions. So I like that you described it that way, because it's an easy way to get a grip on feelings and emotions, which are not exactly the same. And as we learn to pay attention to our feelings in the body and the emotions that arise as a result, we can start to reprogram some of our previous thinking or childhood behavior. And I think that is the path to happiness and health and also soul maturity. Now, you also said, I know you're interested in dreams. You began a study and you have a respect for the wisdom that dwells within each of us and in the dreams that we have. So you began a meditative approach to help people go within and learn more about this any distress, unhappiness, or illness. And you noticed during these meditations that profound changes were starting to happen. So what is it about that process of going within or paying attention to dreams, which are a way of information from a higher informational field or source? And what is the source, actually? What do you believe? Oh, this is a big question. What do you believe?
Many questions.
What do you believe this source might be, and how does it help us when we start to pay attention?
Well, you're actually saying, I say it in my book, Inside Out Healing. First of all, let's just be clear about what or say it again so it's extra clear. People are responsible for their emotions. Every human being on planet Earth is responsible for his or her emotions because they're created by believing your thoughts. And those thoughts are judgments of yourself, your judgments of other people, the way you remember the past and judge the past, and the way you anticipate the future. So when you have an emotion like envy, guilt, resentment, bitterness, future worry, or kind of ungrounded eagerness and hopefulness, it's because you're telling yourself stories, and those stories are going to get you in trouble. Every bubble in the economics is from hope stories that are not grounded, and then every over deep kind of recessive tendency in economics comes from people then telling themselves fear stories too long. That's a collective process. But every person is doing that all the time to themselves. The stories, your thinking creates your emotions, but feeling is a completely independent mode of consciousness. It has nothing whatsoever to do with thinking. It gives us information in our bodies, in the present moment, and that information is essential to us. Just like you said, it tells us when something is not right for us. It tells us when we're in a situation that is where things are not in harmony. It tells us when we're in a situation where things are in good harmony. It gives us in our information in our bodies. So with feeling, you have to feel it. And some feelings are wonderful, heavenly, blissful, ecstatic, and some feelings are very, very dark, hellish, abysmal. And you have to learn to feel those too. And what you said was, if you run away from a feeling into thoughts, the thoughts will create emotions. So you run away from fear, and you go into stories that create anger. Or you run away from emptiness or aloneness or a kind of deep, abysmal, this inexplicable discomfort, and you tell yourself stories about something wrong with you or something wrong with the world, and you become aggressive or you become very negative.
Well,
so you have to learn to feel feelings, and you have to learn to stop the thoughts that create emotions.
And you have to learn to embrace the feelings, all kinds, good and bad, because we do have that shadow side. And when you embrace it, it's no longer something to be feared. So
don't embrace anger, because creating it through your stories. Don't embrace resentment. Don't embrace jealousy. Don't embrace envy.
Oh, no, I don't mean
because those are those are emotions that are created by thinking. Stop the thinking.
To feel it, to know where it's originating from, and to change the patterns so that you eventually can see those episodes or people or situations that are making you go from a state of feeling one way to another, so you can become aware, and then you can quickly dissipate many different events from going any further than they have to. But you do have to feel it. You have to know it, and you can't run away from it. Many people, when they get to feel uncomfortable about something, immediately leave it and say, we'll just not delve too deeply and we'll let it be. But that's not the way to face a fear, conquer a fear, and change a pattern. We all have patterns from our childhood, and some of them were good and some were not good. So we're trying to understand how to create something better within ourselves so we can be in that state of a better state, a peaceful state, a harmonious state, and a healthy state. Now, you mentioned there have been many important influences in your life, but that your work has evolved independently of any specific spiritual or religious tradition. And then you used the term, which I liked very much, radical aliveness. Can you tell us something about that term?
Well, everything we've been talking to so far, you have to be present in your body to learn to make a space to accept the feeling that's very difficult, like deep grief or deep aloneness, and all of us feel those kinds of things. Radical aliveness is basically learning to live more and more in your body, not in your head, and for that you have to practice leaving the thinking that pulls you out of the present moment, and then when you recognize, it's like you're wearing a Harry Potter compass and it says, wake up, you're caught in judgments of yourself and it's making you feel depressive. Or wake up, you're caught in your judgments of your spouse and it's making you feel resentful and angry, and so forth. So it wakes you up, and where does it wake you up to? Back to the present moment, which is the only thing that really exists, and in your body, immediately in your body, fully connected to your sensations, fully connected to your perceptions, fully connected to what is actually happening now. And that's the beginning. That's where
start.
We begin. That's the starting point that we engage over and over. That's the practice. We start there again and again and again. And what happens is we start to really tap this deep intelligence and this deep current of aliveness. I call it radical because the word means root or source.
Mm-hmm.
There's a current of aliveness in every human being when the mind stops and the muddiness or the distress, the agitation that's created by one thought after another, after another, after another. Most people think their state of agitation is normal. In my retreats, I work so hard to get people to a state so deeply in the present and in their bodies that for the first time they say, now I know what it means to love myself. Or now I know what it means to be at one with my environment. And from that point on, they realize a thought shatters it. Literally, shatters that truth.
Yeah, and
then they don't want to be in those thoughts anymore.
Right.
And that's the beginning. That's the beginning of this ongoing practice of transformation.
Yeah, as a Reiki practitioner, and when I channel energy and go into that deep, quiet state and help another person also access that state, it's almost as if you can stay there for a while, even when you open your eyes and you go back to your normal routine, and you can continue to feel balanced, harmony, peaceful, loving. And I like that you said radical aliveness is a vitality. I see it as a universal energy and intelligence. That is universal energy or intelligence. And that comes from our deepest being. And it's actually the source of all life. Where we come from, who we are, where we return, it's like a life force. And I think deep meditation takes you to that place. And you can really learn a lot about who you want to be when you're in that state. And I think that's what most people really want to know, who they are, and they just don't know how to begin to do that. Now, you mentioned the term deep work. So please tell us what deep work is and how it's necessary to achieve a level of well-being.
Deep work starts when you say, I truly want to be a free human being. I want to be a human being capable of profound love. I want to be a human being that other people, when I finally pass on, look and say, how can I be more like that person? So deep work means that you're going to, as you've been saying again and again, you want to find the patterns that limit you. You want to understand your mind, and you want to use the power of your awareness, of present moment awareness, to separate yourself from destructive thoughts and to teach you how to dance in a healing and healthy creative way with the difficult feelings. Anyone wants to dance with, you know, the good feelings, but you know the limit of what you can say yes to in life is really fear. The fear that you don't accept becomes the boundary. So deep work uses everything I know: energy work, movement, breathing, body dynamics, dream work in particular, and in a very not cerebral way. My dream work is very in the body, and I call it deep because I've been doing it for 37 years. I've worked with every form of non-psychotic mental disorder or mental unhappiness. I've worked with every illness anyone could practically name, and people in those illnesses and how they learn to live with it, how they heal or not, how they are with it. There's so much that you can do. Even if you can't heal a disease, you can heal the spirit with which you live your life while you're sick.
Absolutely. You can live with dignity and courage and honor. And that's a healing of great beauty. And I want to say, I think of deep work as doing what is personally necessary to improve the quality of your expression in talking and interacting with people, in being part of the community and world. And I think we're saying the same thing, to be emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually fit, and to live a good life, at peace with the past, embracing your shadow part. We all have negative thoughts at times. Maybe 50% of the thoughts that float in on any given day are negative, but we don't have to embrace that or engage that. We have to recognize that, and then we can go on to having balance and intimacy and love, which is our soul right.
That's so beautifully stated.
Thank you. So we don't have to be a victim of fear, but it takes deep work. I have people come to me and they want one session to change a whole lifetime of patterns, and it's not necessary. I mean, I can't do it. No healer can do it. No doctor can do it. We can only set up an environment for a person to recognize what it is that they really want in their life and how to start to go about it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. We have to teach people how to make an intelligent effort, a right effort, and then grace takes over. But like anything else, you know, there's evidence that it takes about 10,000 hours of practice, whether in sports or in music or in dance, or before you really reach an exceptional level. And 10,000 hours would mean that people would practice coming back to the present and stepping out of their stories, let's say, every day for 4 hours. That, you know, that would take how many years to come to 10,000? You know, it would take
It could take this lifetime or many lifetimes to get.
Well,
to,
you know, you can become you can become a top level musician after 10,000 hours, but that probably is going to take you 10. Nobody listens to the music Mozart wrote when he was 9, 10 years old. It's not until he's about 16 that his music and his genius really emerge. And probably by around 16, he had 10,000 hours of composition and 10,000 hours of piano playing, and he played other instruments. And the same thing with an athlete. You can see tremendous promise at the age of 16, but you're not going to play at 16, no matter how gifted you are, the way you will play at 26, because that's 10,000 hours later.
So I like the words you're using. You're using effort and consistency and practice and deep work. To work on the soul or inner being, it is our God-given right to develop a soul maturity, but it comes with great responsibility, personal responsibility. And if we talk about the five elements of deep work, the first one I know you said was understanding where and when to begin. So the where is in your body, and the when is always right now. So we're asking people to try to begin. And then your second one was about transformation. So we need to learn to live more consistently in the now. And then you discussed the third element was emotions from feelings, which we did discuss before. Mm-hmm. So we need to become aware of the difference there. And then the fourth one was you don't need to fix yourself. There's nothing wrong with any of us. It's the judgment and it's the belief and opinion that one person thinks they have all the answers that show that you really don't have the answer. Because when you can live and let other people live and accept them and help them if they need it, or they can help you if you need it, Then you've reached past your thoughts, I think. I would think you've reached past your thoughts into a deeper part of yourself. And then you can finally, what you say is the fifth element is effort and grace. Tell us something about effort and grace.
Well, also, let me say very briefly, the reason we don't have to fix ourselves is because the reason you want to fix yourself right now is you're feeling something you don't want to let yourself feel. And if you let yourself feel it and accepted that you're feeling it, then you wouldn't have to fix yourself. So you're rejecting. People fix themselves because they say, I'm not enough, which is a belief, just a story. Stop saying that, and you are enough. Without a thought, every human being is exactly as they are, and we're fine. Just fine.
I like hearing that, yes.
We may not be as fast as someone else, or
it's
strong
okay.
as someone else, or as smart as someone else, but we are already sufficient exactly as we are, unless we tell ourselves we're not. And all our lives we've been telling ourselves we're not. So
and
the
other
effort.
People have
the
been telling us we're not, right?
Right. Of course, our parents tell us we're not. The teachers tell us we're not. The religion doesn't tells us we're not. I mean, and, you know, they all have something to sell and they all have something they believe in.
They just still have so much fear that they're passing that fear along to the children. And I really like when I hear a parent say to their children, if the child's fallen or is crying and distressed, you're okay, you're all right. And that's what we're just saying here. We all have to think that way for ourselves and for others, and it's a good way to begin. Now, in your words, Richard, you suggest we are more than anything we can say, feel, or think about ourselves. So I often say in similar fashion, we are all much more than we appear to be. So please tell us how awareness is the way to true choice and lasting change. And I know you have a Mandela of being, which is the model. And I liked it very much the way it was set up in four parts. If you could tell us just something about that, it would be very helpful.
Well, when we ask people to learn to be in the present, in a funny way, it's like saying to someone that they're not in the present, which is impossible. Your body is always in the present. So what we're really saying is understand how your mind takes you out of the present. And what the mandala of being is, or a mandala of consciousness, the word mandala is just the Sanskrit word for circle. And it would be like looking at a compass or looking at a clock, and at the center of that compass or the center of that clock, it's this present moment that is not influenced by a thought. It's the present moment, for example, when an expert golfer swings a club and they're not thinking, or professional athletes in deep flow, or dancers are really dancing in a deep sense of connection and without their brain guiding the movement. Or it's a deep state of meditation, or it's that spontaneous state where poetry flows out of you. It's where, you know, it's why people keep going skiing over and over again, or keep going dancing over and again, or surfing over and over again. It's just because, you know, being in flow in nature, in your body, it's a religious experience. So that's the center. That's the now. And then there are four other nows. And there's the now of when you get caught in your ways you anticipate the future, which will scare you silly or make you hopeful, but it won't be healthy hope. It'll be hope that's running away from a feeling. Or there's the now when you're caught in the past and you're telling yourself beliefs about the past that make you sad or angry or, you know, a victim, basically a victim of what happened in the past. Or there's the now of your judgments of yourself. I'm not smart enough. Or I'm smarter than the others, or I'm not attractive enough, or I'm more loyal than you. And, you know, judgment after judgment that makes you feel special, but it's not the real you.
Because you're separated from the real you. The real you is not all those thoughts, but you're in a being and connection to universal energy and everything that is eternal and forever. So I think allowing, accepting, and surrendering to all these influences without the influence of ego is a good way to go. And you wrote, as you come into the present and learn to make space for every feeling, a mysterious alchemy takes place. Something deep inside you responds, and we can call it the soul, and you become more open to life. Connections with other people are more real, honest and direct. You're naturally spontaneous and playful, and simple things delight you. And I'm delighted by that. And I want to thank you, Richard, for sharing your scientific and inner view of self, awareness, and ego, offering ways to help reach our human potential and to begin healing on a multidimensional level. The spiritual evolution you and I and others hope for that will awaken and revitalize each human soul and rejuvenate the physical world is only in its beginning stages. I think progress will quicken as we work in unity to bring the best from within ourselves to others. So please go to richardmoss.com to read more about Inside Out Healing. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, let me read a quote written by Dr. Moss. I have lived long enough to know without any doubt that the greatest and most fulfilling adventure in life is that of becoming more conscious and building living relationships. The only truly essential requirement is willingness. Are you willing to change yourself? Whether you're motivated by illness, unhappiness, or the quest to taste life as completely as you can, the keys to success are within you. Connection to your true self is a state of being that is contagious. An awake, loving person creates a field of consciousness in which other people feel safe and become more loving. A frightened or angry person also creates a field, but it's one that engenders fear and division. The simple truth is that few of us have any idea how well we can feel and how healthy we can be if we start to unify ourselves from within, learning to live more in the now. Dr. Moss and I invite you to become the loving example and energy for bringing the best of yourself into all your experiences. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to listen to the enlightened authors and visionaries who explore the world of universal energy and healing and who share methods and techniques for a healthier lifestyle. Please go to my website, CherylGlick.com, and WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. for a complete listing of new and archived shows. Thank you very much.